This is Tell Me More from NPR News. I'm Celeste Headlee. Michelle Martin is away. And it's time now for our weekly visit to the barbershop. That's where the guys talk about what's in the news and what's on their minds. Sitting in the chairs for a shape-up this week, our author and culture critic, Jimmy Israel. He's with us from member station WBEZ in Chicago. At member station WOSU in Columbus, Ohio, is R. Clark Cooper. He's the former executive director of the Log Cabin Republicans. And then in our New York bureau, Pablo Torre, senior writer at ESPN.com, and Kai Wright. He's the editorial director for the website colorlines.com. Welcome, everyone, and take it away, Jimmy.
C. Headlee.
Jimmy Israel. I guess that would be J. Israel.
In the place to be. Shout out to Paul Anthony and Full Force. Hey, fellas, welcome to the shop. How we doing?
What's up? Cool. We had some Gnarls Barkley on organ in the transition music there. That was
That's
great.
Right.
Now I know. Nice, right?
Actually, yeah. I played that. I played organ, did you? Yeah. Kai, it's good to have you back again.
It's lovely to be here, Jimmy.
All right, well, let's get it started. The talk of the town this week is about the Supreme Court. The court heard arguments about California's Proposition 8 and DOMA, the Defense of Marriage Act. Celeste, you want to set that up for us?
You know that I do. Okay, to refresh some people's minds, DOMA is the 1996 federal law that defines marriage as a union between a man and a woman, at least when it comes to getting federal benefits. Prop 8, on the other hand, is a California law, a state law that bans same-sex marriage. They had arguments at the Supreme Court this week, and we probably will not get a final decision until at least the summer.
Thanks for thumbnailing that for us, Celeste. Sure. R. Clark and Kai.
Yes.
Coop's in the house. Check this
That's
out.
Right. I'm in the house from Columbus, Ohio State. Go Buckeyes, which we'll talk about later.
Go Blue.
Hold on now. Wait a second. Before all our war breaks out. As it happens, Clark and Kai, you two are on opposite sides of the political spectrum, but you're also both gay. I want to get each of your takes on this on these cases. Kai, let's start with you. What stood out to you about these arguments?
Well, I mean, so on the arguments themselves, it's what stands out is how little constitutionally is likely to get resolved. But I think, given you know that on both cases, it sounds like they want to avoid ruling directly on the question of marriage and on same-sex marriage. But I think bigger than that is every time there's a big moment around gay civil rights and everyone starts talking about it, I'm always struck on how big the difference is and growing between the conversation in officialdom and the rest of the world.
Flesh that out a little bit.
It's we're debating. There was this moment when Justice Kagan read from the report for the Defense of Marriage Act, from the Congressional Report of the Defense of Marriage Act, where it states that Congress wishes I forget the language now, but to make mention of its disapproval, its moral disapproval of homosexuality, right? Mm-hmm. And it read like something from 1896, not from 1996. And so I guess there's the distance we've traveled in just mm-hmm. 15 short years. But it's also, maybe it's because I live in New York and I'm gay, but, my partner's niece is staying with us from a small town in Wisconsin, a young woman this week while this debate is going on. And she's just mystified as to what we're talking about and why this is an issue. It's just at the level of officialdom, we're debating whether or not Congress can issue its disapproval of homosexuality. There's just such a gap. Hopefully we'll get caught up, but there's such a gap.
Cool.
Yeah, well, speaking of that gap, Bob Barr, who is known infamously as one of the fathers of DOMA, he in 2011 spoke at a Log Cabin Republicans event and said this was a really, really bad idea and actually called for the repeal of the law. Congressional staffers at the time, people who are on the House Judiciary Committee, who are now many of them are in the private sector, said, what the heck were we thinking? So regardless, and as Kai mentioned, the younger the generation, the more likely people have no understanding as to why this law was even created. But if one just looks at it from a constitutional perspective, and this is what the Supreme Court is trying to parse down, and earlier court rulings at the circuit court level last year at the First Circuit and then later in the Ninth Circuit found that it was unconstitutional because it actually was offensive to the constitutional guarantees of federalism and individual liberty. And it's also on a big thing, if you're a conservative, even if someone is squeamish about same-sex marriage, they can't deny the fact that DOMA is intrusive and impedes upon states' rights and state sovereignty. And so that is where there may be a final success later this year, probably in June, when we maybe get a ruling on this, where the court may come out and say, we're not going to rule on same-sex marriage, but we can rule on DOMA, the Defense of Marriage Act, walking all over the Constitution and walking all over states' rights.
Let me take care of some business here real quick. If you're just joining us, you're listening to our weekly barbershop conversation. In the shop this week, writer and culture critic Jimmy Israel, Pablo Torre from ESPN.com, R. Clark Cooper, former executive director for the Log Cabin Republicans, whom you just heard, and Kai Wright, editorial director for ColorLines.com. Okay, business done. Back to you, Jimmy.
Okay, thanks, Celeste. You know, Pablo, you are electric youth in the barbershop today. Shout out to Debbie Gibson.
Heavy crown.
I know, yet it's on your head. So speak to that whole youth piece. What's your take on this?
Yeah, I mean, well, first off, from the sports perspective, I mean, we're seeing NFL players who are publicly wondering the New York Times, what is the big deal? And from that point, if that's a canary in the proverbial mineshaft, I mean, that's a pretty significant one. But more than that, I think one of the things – I mean, Kai's completely right. It's terrifying how different I think at least the public that I interact with generally, how unimpressed they are with the sort of the moral panic that is being proposed out of D.C. right now. And the one comment that I want to highlight here is Justice Scalia, who mentioned, you know, there is this considerable disagreement, I'm quoting here, among sociologists as to what the consequences of raising a child in a single-sex family – whether that is harmful to the child or not. And there just is – and the Washington Post pointed out, there is just no sort of disagreement among sociologists. It is about the product of stability in a relationship between two parents in the household, socioeconomic resources, all of the stuff that is logically true that you might intuit without any of these sort of artificial moral barriers. I mean, that's what's the real issue here.
I mean, Justice Scalia is a man who vehemently opposed getting rid of laws that criminalize sodomy not too long ago.
Right.
And used language about the deviance of the behavior. So that's Justice Scalia. But I think what is also striking is outside of the court this week.
The demonstrations in front, you mean?
Well, yeah. Well, actually, there's the demonstrations in front, which are always colorful. But the but amongst elected officials, both in the Republican and the Democratic Party. I mean, if this may also be the week in which the Democratic Party finally fully came out as pro-gay. Right?
Okay. And we're going to continue to watch this conversation as it develops. But another big story of the week was the president's press conference on gun control. Yesterday, he gathered family members from victims of gun violence from all across the country. You know, we got a clip, yes, Celeste?
Of course we did. President Obama talked about some of the major shootings in America's recent history, from Tucson to Aurora, Colorado. Here's what he had to say in reference to the shooting in Newtown.
The entire country was shocked. And the entire country pledged we would do something about it, and this time would be different. Shame on us if we've forgotten.
Wow. Thanks for that, Celeste. Coop, you know, I'm so glad that, you know, the president, known for flowery language and strong, heavily worded platitudes, is actually on. He has a mission of value. No, seriously. I mean, that's just how I feel. I haven't always felt like that about Barack Obama. I mean, he says some awfully pretty words, but when it comes to action, he's not a man of action. You know, he's a lot more Sidney Poitier than Richard Roundtree, for my liking. But now he finally
get up off Sidney Poitier, Jamie.
He
has finally picked out his afro and put on his leather jacket.
This is not going anywhere good, Jimmy. Let's get to a question.
He's ready to work. Coop, what's your take?
I was just envisioning a drop the microphone moment. I'm not going to say it because I don't want the lawyers to get down on me at the mothership there. Anyway, no, the legislation is going to be up for consideration after the Passover Easter recess. And so it has to be a bipartisan approach. And one of the things that needs to be taken into account, and I'm not sure the president has really taken this into account is the diversity of the U.S. populace when it comes to the issue of gun ownership, legal gun ownership. Earlier this month, I was just out at Fort Huachuca, Arizona, that is on the border with Mexico. It is just down the road from Tucson. It's within Gabby Gifford's district. And many people out there are gun owners for many reasons, for hunting, for sport, but also for protection. And I'm not saying this in a hyperbolic sense. The threat of issues with Mexican drug lords and gangs that are in and around that border area are a very serious, real threat to ranchers and folks who live in the Tucson, Nogales, Sierra Vista area. So, again, when you're talking about gun ownership, legal gun ownership, and the constitutional Second Amendment right aspect of it, one does have to factor all of that in crafting legislation when they get back from recess. So to simply say from a speech that there is a moral authority to do this is not enough. And there does have to be a real factoring in of the diversity of legal gun owners.
Okay. All right. Well, I'm with that. Kai.
I mean, I think to me, it is another one of these issues where I'm struck between the difference between the conversation in officialdom and, you know, the common sense wisdom of a lot of folks, normal folks. And, you know, I mean, the kinds of change, when you actually look at what we're talking about in these bills, these are not terribly controversial things. I mean, the universal background check, for instance, you know, is a pretty straightforward idea that it should be as equally difficult to buy a gun as it is to vote. And the fact that that has rescinded in the conversation is striking. But I have to say, you know, I mean, looking at the politics of it, the next this recess is going to be spirited. You know, I mean, all sides of this debate intend to come very hard for these town hall meetings. And Jimmy, to get to your point, I am impressed with the president in the fact that I agree with you. though you know, I'm not mad at Sidney Poitier in that way.
Sidney. We're cool.
but I agree with you that he, you know, has often failed to have, you know, as the Supreme Court asked him this week, the courage of his convictions. And it does seem to be an issue where he has gotten that. And the only way that this, I mean, the reason why if it has, in fact, receded from the public conversation, it's because the strategy was for folks who wanted to stop gun control was to delay it long enough for the outrage to go away. And what the presidency offers is a giant megaphone and bully pulpit to put stuff back in front of people. So if he's going to spend the next week giving speeches like that, it can change the political calculus on this. Mm-hmm.
Speaking of outrage, it's March Madness, yeah? You know, spring fever is in the house.
Yes.
Yeah, you know, Cleveland State, a little quiet this year. A little quiet, but they're still next year. Pablo, over at the TMM fan bracket, you're getting beat by some listeners. Really, bro?
Some common listeners.
I think now's a good time to remind everyone that you're a senior writer for ESPN. No. You picked Georgetown to win the whole thing. God. What went wrong?
Needless to say, background checks for March Madness would not have helped. I am embarrassed a bit to my profession. But look, this is one of the most upset, friendly, insane tournaments in recent memory. I mean, we just saw the second and third most popular picks to win it all, Indiana and Miami, get wiped out completely. Indiana was President Obama's pick and many others. No perfect brackets, by the way, according to ESPN.com. And there are a bazillion people entered it in. There are no perfect brackets left. And the story of this tournament to me is Florida Gulf Coast. I mean, the school that was formed in 1997, their oldest alumnus is 37 years old, just made this NCAA run. They live on the beach. There's no one really knew they existed, but that's sort of the magic of this thing, whereas schools like that that no one picked are into the second round and doing very well. So I have no defense for myself. I did pick Harvard because I went there, and that's literally only one I got right. Everything else was very wrong, so...
Coop.
Maybe.
Go ahead, man. Now's your chance.
Having grown up in Florida, I can tell you it's pronounced Gulf Coast. yes, that's true. That I'm sure the university would agree with. That's right. West Coast. But I'll tell you, you know, not to hate on the Gators. I am a Knoll. That's my disclaimer. I went to Florida State. But I am rooting for Florida Gulf Coast because of the Cinderella story. It is absolutely phenomenal how far they've come. And in fact, there are people in that area that didn't even know there was a state university because it is so new. But more immediately, sitting here in Columbus, Ohio, OSU, I am on campus. Go Buckeyes. In fact, after this program, my stepdad, who's a professor emeritus, Dr. Tuckman, he has taken mom and I out to Sloopy's Diner to celebrate that victory that happened last night, that thriller, part two. Amazing.
All right,
if anybody
that,
watched
kind
that
of
game.
Enough about I'm going to have to break in
hey,
here.
Hey,
I'm going to call an audible. I'm going to call an audible here, but I want to do a quick lightning round if you guys are up, because we had that controversial ad coming out from Nike. When Tiger Woods became the number one golfer in the world again, they immediately aired an ad, and the tagline was, "Winning takes care of everything. Tiger Woods, world number one." So lightning round. Let's get your response to this. Pablo, does winning take care of everything?
It does, especially in a year of Paterno and Lance Armstrong and all of these.
Okay,
folks,
so Pablo says yes. R. Clark, everything good. Winning takes care of everything, solves everything.
That adds a no-go, but victories on the green or the battlefield can wash away the sins of past career failures. And I caveat that with career failures, not personal.
Okay, Kai, what do you think?
Certainly in the category of using celebrity to sell people stuff, victory will fix it.
Yes.
Okay,
yes,
and
yes.
Jimmy, you've got kids. What do you think? Winning takes care of everything, wipes away the background?
Listen, as my grandfather would say, the main thing is he's playing good golf again. That's what he gets paid to do. It's not my turn to watch him do other stuff. So he's playing good golf. Swing on, brother. Swing on.
It's Lindsey Vonn's turn now. Anyway, that was our author and culture critic, Jimmy Israel, with us from member station WBEZ in Chicago. R. Clark Cooper, Republican strategist, former executive director of the Log Cabin Republicans. He joined us from member station WOSU in Columbus, Ohio. Senior writer at ESPN.com and bracket buster Pablo Torre. Kai Wright, editorial director at colorlines.com. They both joined us from our New York bureau. Since I'm the host, I get the last word, so I'm going to say go blue. Thank you all so much.
Thank you.
Yep.
Remember, if you can't get enough Barbershop Buzz on the radio, look for our Barbershop podcast. That's in the iTunes store or at npr.org. And that's our program for today. I'm Celeste Headlee. This is Tell Me More from NPR News. We'll talk more Monday. We'll be right back.